Trend number four, urbanization defines the terrain of the jobs war. The jobs war is a new phenomenon in global history. Until the Industrial Revolution took off around 1750, real jobs for pay were held only by a small proportion of the population, even in North America and Western Europe. Everyone else was either a small farmer or independent craftsman in an economy that relied on human and animal power, supplemented by fire as well as some wind and water power. Division of labor was limited and enterprises were small, so it made sense for people to be scattered. Perhaps only 15% lived in villages or cities. For centuries, urbanization progressed at a slow, steady pace. But in a relatively short time, that's all changed, especially in developing countries where the rates of urban expansion are unprecedented. China, India, and Brazil are obvious examples. An interdisciplinary team of researchers from Texas A&M, Yale, Stanford, and Arizona State has studied this phenomenon and concludes that globally, more than 590,000 square miles of land will be annexed by cities over the next 20 years. That constitutes a landmass twice the size of Texas, or about the size of Mongolia. During this same time frame, the United Nations predicts an additional 1.47 billion people will be added to urban areas. This will drive a global emergence of megacities in India and China, as well as Indonesia, Mexico, Brazil, Pakistan, Nigeria, and several other countries. But unlike those in Japan and the U.S. that have grown up at a manageable pace and were well capitalized with infrastructure, these new megacities will experience severe growing pains. In the coming years, the megacities in developing countries will be ground zero for the jobs war. However, the outcome of that war will depend on the nature of the population growth, the level and type of infrastructure that is built, and the degree to which industry is enabled. Already, every megacity in the developing world is ringed by an enormous shanty town of squatters. The question for emerging countries will be whether this poor, uneducated segment of their populations can become productive workers and middle-class consumers. Because of the sheer size and certain growth trajectory of both China and India, an analysis of each country's approach to urbanization is merited, as well as an analysis of the impact each will have on the global economy. Historically, India has been more urbanized than China. In 1950, 17% of India's population lived in cities versus 13% of China's. However, between 1950 and 2005, as the percentages grew dramatically for both countries, China surpassed India with its urbanization climbing to 41% compared to 29% in India. As this growth trend continues, by 2025, India will add another 215 million people to its cities, raising its urbanization rate to 38%. And China will add another 350 million urban residents, mushrooming its urbanization rate to 64%. To fully grasp the scope of this explosive urban growth, one only needs to remember that 350 million is nearly 40 million more than the current population of the United States. In China, 70% of the urban population growth will come from people migrating from rural areas to cities. Although both countries will experience tremendous growth, their approaches and planning are a study in contrasts. Focusing first on China, it has been estimated that the significant influx into urban areas will create 221 cities that will have a population of more than 1 million. Currently, there are only 35 cities of this size in the entire EU. To move these people, 170 mass transit systems will be built. To house these people and their jobs, 5 million new buildings with 40 billion square feet of cumulative floor space will be constructed, and 50,000 new skyscrapers of 30 or more floors could be built. That would be the equivalent of constructing 10 new cities on the scale of New York City. Another significant number to track in the coming years will be the growth in middle-class households. As outlined in trend number one, this figure will be important because the route to true job creation is through customer creation. The McKinsey Global Institute projects that today's 55 million Chinese middle-class households will balloon to nearly 280 million households in 2025, and they would represent more than three-quarters of all of China's urban households. Whereas China has focused on shaping its urbanization, spending $116 per capita on urban infrastructure annually, India is operating under a different model, one with less discipline, less structure, and less investment. India's annual spending on urban infrastructure totals only $17 per capita. So, what does India have in common with China? By 2030, it is estimated that 590 million Indians will be urban dwellers, almost double the entire U.S. population. India will have 270 million more working-age people than are there today. It will have 68 cities with populations of more than 1 million, up from 42 today. And between now and 2030, commercial and residential floor space equivalent to that in all of Chicago will need to be built every year. Today, the population in India is rapidly migrating from rural subsistence farms to cities where they want to make money and consume. But unlike China, India doesn't have the enabling infrastructure to make that happen. For both India and China, the big question will be whether or not their urbanization will offer an edge in the jobs war. In terms of shifting demographics, India will have an advantage with a younger population that typically speaks English. By 2025, projections show 28% of China's population being over 55, but only 16% for India's. Meanwhile, urban middle-class households in India are expected to increase from 22 million today to 91 million by 2030. In light of this trend, consider the following forecasts. First, capitalizing on urbanization for job creation will require a transition to a consumer economy. China may have a huge lead in infrastructure, but it has come at the expense of creating consumers. The construction of large-scale worker housing projects in new megacities may have provided work during the Great Recession, but it took valuable resources away from creating a domestic consumer base. Unfortunately, this mindset is typical of how central planners work. They too easily place an emphasis on what has been needed rather than on what will be needed. The question now is whether the Chinese can transition to the next stage. Since they lack solid market signals, we at Trends think this will be a tall hurdle to overcome. India is better poised to make this transition, with its focus on a new middle class that already competes in the global world of IT services and products. This is not too different from the market-driven trickle-down strategy that has worked in the developed world. This has, however, never been proven when compressed to a 21st century timescale or raised to the scale of a billion people. This is uncharted territory. Second, China's and India's ability to compete in the coming jobs war will hinge on the sophistication of their workers, not just raw numbers. The days of winning the manufacturing competition through cheap labor will fade, as new techniques in manufacturing enable any city or country to be competitive. To implement this new technology, however, a new breed of paraprofessional workers and systems support technicians will be required who can run the more intricate manufacturing systems. A climate that rewards entrepreneurship will also need to exist for countries to create jobs that will impact the global economy. One big difference with today's urbanization, and perhaps a real game changer, is the prevalence of technology in developing sectors, particularly in India. Every family in the global slums now has a cell phone and some sort of access to radio and TV. They can communicate and learn, and they know what's going on in the rest of the world. This capability will quickly transform migrating workers from unconnected rural residents into savvy urban workers and consumers. Looking to China, another hurdle it needs to surmount is a general lack of practical skills, such as teamwork, taking responsibility, and communication skills on the part of workers. These shortfalls will severely limit China's ability to engage in the higher-value economic activities that will enable it to meet the increasingly complex needs of the 21st century. Third, fast and extensive urbanization in developing countries will be successful if four key principles for urban productivity are adopted. One, integrated dense developments must be planned. Sprawling horizontal development should be avoided since lower energy demands, up to 20%, are created by denser cities. Another benefit of dense cities is a greater availability of more skilled labor. Two, the demand for resources needs to be managed, not just the supply. The goal is higher energy productivity, which frees up resources for investment elsewhere. Three, investment in labor and in skills development is crucial for increasing the type of value-added economic activities needed to ensure a strong position in the battle for jobs. And four, public sector productivity needs to be enhanced. Clear goals, effective measurement processes, and a balanced budget with low taxation can all have a significant impact.